hello again, and welcome to another episode of Wealth Talk. I'm Christian Rodwell, Membership Director for Wealth Builders, joined by the founder of Wealth Builders, Mr. Kevin Whelan.
Hello, Chris. Good to talk to you again.
Great to see you today, Kevin. Now, Kevin, in the last episode, we talked about the seven pillars. We went into a bit of detail there, gave a good overview of what those seven pillars are. And of course, they are part of the Wealth Builders structure, the logo. Mm-hmm. We've covered the foundation.
Yeah.
We've covered the seven pillars.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about the roof that sits on top.
The roof. Right. So let's say, Chris, there's no ceiling. There's no ceiling to the amount of wealth that can be created here. What we're saying is not a ceiling, but a roof. And a roof is a structure. And you can imagine, if you're looking at a building, one of the very first things that a good architect or a good builder will want anyone to do is make that watertight, because that keeps it safe. Mm-hmm. So the protection of your assets and the legal organization of those assets and how to protect them is really the essence of the roof. And there are a number of different aspects of that. Shall I touch on some of those?
I think it would be important to do so.
Okay. Well, you might remember from my very first story that, you know, when my dad died, which was my catalyst to create wealth, unfortunately, he died without a will. Now, this is not necessarily, you know, the biggest thing that could have happened. But of course, whenever we've got assets, we want to make it very clear how that ownership of those assets will pass when we pass. And most business owners and a lot of employees just don't get round to doing that. It's one of those drifty things again, Chris, that is a really simple thing to do. The steel people tend to overanalyze it and want to know exactly where everything would go. The simple thing to do, if you haven't made a will, the government will already make one for you. And that's called the law of intestacy. And that doesn't sound very nice.
Not one you really want to have
And I don't want to go into that, but it's not good when for a few pounds you can take care of a will. Mm. And a will is just a way of saying, if you know something happens to me, I would like this to be the flow of the assets that I own when I'm no longer around. Mm. Now, it's equally important to think about how you do that when you're alive, not just when you're dead. And the way to do that is a combination of things. One is called power of attorney. Now, power of attorney is something that we've come across, I suppose. But in law now, there are two types. Mm-hmm. Power of attorney over financial assets. So if I were to become sick, disabled, unable to help myself, what if I've got all my assets in my name for tax reasons? Or what if I've got something jointly for whatever reason with a spouse or a partner? And I can't sign a document or they can't sign a document. And there are horror stories of business owners where they were the person driving the business and their spouse was maybe playing a bit part in the business, helping with admin and support. And somebody gets seriously ill and the banks don't cooperate because there's nobody to sign documents. So power of attorney is a document that's a living document. It says if something happens to me and I can no longer take care of myself in terms of making decisions, somebody else can do so, and it's prearranged. Mm-hmm. Not difficult to do. Few hundred pounds, nothing more than that. And you can get that from any good lawyer or any good legal provider of services. So no axe to grind there. Mm-hmm. The second power of attorney is a power of attorney over your directive you'd want to make if you were ill. You know, you see in all sorts of TV programs a do not resuscitate order and things like that. So while I'm not talking about the most pleasant things in life, they're nonetheless important, because being watertight doesn't deal with pleasant things. It deals with things that are fundamental. So getting your will done, appointing who you want, if you've got children as executors and guardians, making sure you've got a power of attorney for your financial assets and a power of attorney for how you would want your medical requirements mm-hmm. to be taken care of. And I suppose there's another one that I would often see when I deal with business owners. And often they've created an agreement, sometimes by a shake of the hand, sometimes by some form of shareholder agreement. But there's no document that deals with, well, what if? You know, it's not clear what the exit strategy is. So if you have a business, and a business, as you remember from last time, Chris, is fundamental pillar, a pillar I love, mm-hmm. particularly as an asset. But if you've got a business with somebody else, you do need to make sure you've got a very clear path as to what happens if. So that's the legal side of things. Mm. Does that help?
It does indeed. And what else constitutes in the roof?
Well, the other issue with that is the word trust. Now, I don't mean trust as I trust you, you trust me, but the concept of the use of a legal instrument called a trust. Now, we already know about trust in our lives because for the vast majority of people, the most popular pillar, the most popular asset where people build their wealth in the UK, can you remember what that one was, Chris?
I think it might be property.
That's the one they want, but the one that more people rely on in the 95% is the pension.
Oh.
Now, the pension is a form of trust.
Okay.
Right. Now, it's a trust, but what happens in a trust then is somebody else is the trustee. So if you've got a insurance company as the trustee, then technically in law, the assets of a trust belong to the trustees. Mm. And therefore, technically, you're the beneficiary. I'm not sure I'm a big fan of that. I like to control my own assets. So it goes back to this point about the use of the concept of the director's pension or SAS.
That, yeah.
Wherever that's possible to do, you take control and become your own trustee. So you can see how these things work together. The other point about trust is most people who think about taking care of their family, their loved ones when they die, they tend to take out something to protect themselves in the event of that death. That's a life insurance policy. Right. Now, I'm not saying anybody needs one or should have one or shouldn't have one, but there's a place for insurance if you've got a big mortgage or if you want to make sure somebody's taken care of, you're the breadwinner. But what I almost never see happen, Chris, is the policy itself being put into trust.
Right.
And why that's really important is if you die and you leave a life insurance policy, that insurance policy pays out. It's now paying out and is potentially assessable for inheritance tax.
Right.
And if you want to leave a good legacy, unless you love the Inland Revenue more than you love your kids, you don't want to do that.
Mm.
And you know how much it costs to write a life insurance policy in trust? It's zero, because all you need to do is tick a box.
Right.
Do you know how many people tick the boxes? Virtually none, because the insurance salesman, more often than not, just want to sell the policy. They don't want to go that extra mile of creating the document after the event where you tick a box to nominate in trust. If it's in trust, what that means is you're saying, in the event of my death, I put this policy into trust. Now my family have control of that. And because it's in a trust, it's not subject to inheritance tax.
Mm.
In the same way as a pension trust is not subject to inheritance tax. So it's important, and we're not going to become legal experts in a podcast, Chris, and we're not suggesting anybody should, but getting to understand the use of trusts and how you deal with trusts is one of the biggest things you can do to protect your assets.
Well, we should definitely talk about that in some more detail in another podcast, perhaps.
Absolutely, we can get into that, particularly around business ownership and so on. The other issue, I suppose, just going back to the life cover bit, which is an interesting thought. We talked in debits when we trying to help people create money, that one of the things they can do is think about the tax they're paying.
Mm.
So generally speaking, if I've got a life insurance policy, I'm paying for that policy out of taxed income.
Right.
I've earned the money, I paid the tax, I paid the premium. What if I could pay that premium because I decide it's important to protect my family, and I could pay that premium and have the government pay towards the premium and reduce my net cost? I think that might be interesting.
That would be pretty smart.
Yeah, smart people do that. And this is called relevant life. Not that other life cover is irrelevant. It's just all technical terminology, I'm afraid, we get when we're in the wealth space. Is it's a type of insurance where you take out as a business owner. Another important reason to be a business owner, not just because you're creating value.
So many benefits.
Yeah, not just because you can have a SAS, a director's pension, not just because you've got a complete freedom to create as much value as you want. Not just that, but you get tax breaks too. And the tax breaks are really important to take on board. And Robert Kiyosaki phrases it like this, and I think it's great. Employees earn money, pay tax, spend what's left. Business owners earn money, then spend the money and pay tax on what's left. In other words, there are so many things legitimately a business owner can do that's tax deductible. Pension contributions, tax deductible, relevant life premiums, insurance cover for your family where the part of the premium is paid by tax relief. It's just a great thing to know. Now, these things are never, never, never complicated. But in the drift life, when people get confused, and they get complacent, they don't get round to doing these things, which is why I don't hold anything against the old man. But when he died not putting these things in place, I realized that part of my work for myself and the work that I do for others to make sure that I'm tough enough to say, let's get this done. And when they get it done, it's watertight. And then you can have the peace of mind, spend the rest of your life concentrating on building your assets, knowing they're well protected.
And that allows you, referring back to those five levels, that financial legacy, without these, that will become.
Yeah. Can you stand anymore?
I think so.
Here's another one for you. Most people, their primary asset by which we start with on the wealth building journey is to try and help them make more money from the use of their home.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, people own their home in a special legal way. And the way they own their home is something called joint tenants. Mm. So joint tenants, Chris. Now, why am I telling you that? Well, when you own something as joint tenants, that's the legal speak. That's what says at land registry. It means if I own my property as joint tenants with my wife, if I die, she owns 100% of the house. Well, that is that a good idea or a bad idea? Well, it sounds good. But what is the consequence? If I die and she gets a whole house, and let's take one consequence. So I'll die before her. I'm pretty certain of that, right? So if I go before my wife and then she goes a bit doolally, and she needs long-term care, what does she own? She owns a house and a nice one. And what that's going to mean is potentially that home could be sold to pay for care costs.
That's right.
There's a different way of doing it. There's a way of owning your property, owning your home, called tenants in common. And when we meet and deal with our mentoring clients, one of the things we do is we go look at land registry and see, let's see how you own your own home. Now, when I ask people, do you own your home as joint tenants or tenants in common? Do they know? They never know. So I know if they don't know, it's joint tenants.
Right.
Because you have to put a bit of effort in to create tenants in common. And what you do there is you say, you basically go to a lawyer, costs maybe a few hundred pounds, not more, and say, I would like to own my home as tenants in common. And let's say it's 50-50. So I own 50%. My wife owns 50%. So if I die, I leave my 50% in a trust. You're getting there, Chris. Mm-hmm. I own my 50% in a trust, but I'm no longer around. So my children and my wife can benefit from the trust, but she's not the legal owner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we send her doolally again. So she goes doolally, but what does she own? Half a house. You cannot assess half a house for purposes of long-term care. Mm-hmm. So you're removing the property from the ravages and dangers of care costs and many other risks too.
Wow.
Beyond the next generation. I mean, so these are not difficult things to get your head around. Maybe if you're hearing it first time in this episode, yes, it might be a lot very fast, but not difficult. Slow it down. How much does it cost to do these things? Wills, few hundred pounds. Powers of attorney, few hundred pounds. Trusts, possibly nothing. Creating something, tenants in common, few hundred pounds. So for less than a couple of thousand pounds, probably, you've protected yourself and all of the assets you not just own now, could potentially own in the future. And you just keep building layers and layers and layers of this. And it's really not hard, but it's the sort of stuff that busy people just never get around to.
Wow.
Is that helpful?
You have given us something to chew over there. So I would recommend listening back to this episode.
It's definitely probably worth listening back.
Taking a couple of notes and doing a couple of checks, because those are very simple things to implement.
The difficult thing about checking whether your property's joint tenants or tenants in common is you need to be able to access land registry. Now, we have got that because we do this a lot. And there's special terminology, which is too complicated for me to explain. But if you're not sure, then maybe if there's a way for someone who feels very strongly about this to reach out, and we can help them understand that by checking it out for them.
Well, absolutely. And if you're listening to any episodes of Wealth Talk and you have questions, then the best place is to go and join the Wealth Builders membership community on Facebook, free Facebook group, just search for Wealth Builders. And we've got hundreds of members in there who have experience with this. And of course, we're in there regularly answering questions. So that's probably the fastest way to get access to us.
And, great.
Yeah.
So protecting the roof. So we've taken care of our foundation. We built our foundation on a solid mindset. We've created money in our finance review. We've decided by doing our wealth dynamic, we know exactly where our wealth building compass should point. We're getting clear on our target level of wealth, where we're aiming. We know the pillars that we want to engage in. We've protected our assets. What could possibly go wrong, Chris? This isn't really that difficult, but it's just so rarely put into practice. Mm-hmm. And I would commend anybody to start reviewing some of these things again and make a decision. Choose to be wealthy. Don't choose to stay on the right-hand side of the wealth dynamic. Don't stay exclusively in your home and your pension parked. You know, participate in your own wealth. Take care of some of these things. Create the peace of mind that it will bring, the wisdom that you can teach on to the next generation, and wealth that just keeps growing and growing and growing.
And wouldn't it be a good idea for us to actually start bringing in some of the members of the community to share actually real life examples of how they've applied this?
And we could definitely do that, and maybe interview some.
I think so.
Maybe that would work. And maybe if there's some specific areas where the points we're making in the podcast people want to pick up specifically, if we need to get specific expertise like a lawyer or somebody who's a specialist in some of these things, we can bring them in too, just to bring these little nuggets of opportunity
to bring it to life
and take care of it, you know, so people can do. It's not just about listening. That's the drifty course or the drifting way, yes. If you remember, right? So yeah. We don't want to just get information and then listen to this podcast and say, well, actually, in the moment, when I'm listening, wherever I'm listening, this is really important stuff, but then I don't do anything. The big hole in the get round to it is the thing that holds people back. Let's see if we can help them.
Don't let that happen to you. Okay, that's been a really, really good episode today. Thanks so much for sharing that, Kevin.
No problem.
I look forward to catching up on the next episode of Wealth Talk.
See ya.